Ayin Tes Amud Aleph, and you'll see the wide lines. It's the second of the wide lines. Varei Zirone Gina Demakami Dezarinu. Now, we've been discussing the shear of Hotzah, the minimum shear, and we came to the conclusion that it doesn't matter whether the object is completely finished or it's incomplete, it's got the same shear, because even the incomplete one is potential to reach its completion. And we discuss this with regard to oros, as far as tanning them. We have something that could be tanned, we have something that was already tanned, and the shear in both oros is going to be the same. We spoke about something called samanim, which are herbs, and there's a process by which we do sharia, and the same shir fotzah samanim shruyim applies to samanim she'enim shruyim. What about the case of zirune gina? I mean, these are seeds, and once again, there's a distinction between planted seeds and unplanted seeds. And we find a difference in the shear, l'chora. Look, to mekami dezarinu, as far as the shear for seeds before they were planted, tnan, we have a Mishnah later on in Masechet Shabbos that says, zeruni, zerone gina, pochus mikagrogos. If you have garden seeds, and they're less than the shear of a dried fig, a grogeres, is Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, chamisha, he has to take out at least 5 seeds. This is the smallest measurement that he could be chayav for. That's as far as mekami dezarinu, be'ilu basa dezarinu tanan. If they've already been planted, we have another Mishnah, which is also coming up very soon on the next daf. And there it says, Zevel Vechol Hadak. If you have fertilizer or fine sand, what's the shear fault? So, Kedei Lezabel Bo Kelach Shel Kruv. He's chayev if he has enough to fertilize a single stalk of cabbage. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. The Chachamim omrim kidei lezabel krisha, in order to fertilize a leek. And again, the measurements here of the Chachamim are a little bit smaller than that of Rabbi Akiva, Rashi says. But anyway, we see clearly although a single stalk is significant, he's not chayev unless he's motzi unplanted seeds in a quantity, a certain quantity. We don't assume that this minimum shear for tanned hides and for untanned hides are to be identical. Why should we assume that? If we have here a Mishnah that differentiates between pachus zaroni gina, that according to Rabbi Yehuda you need 5 zroim, chamisha we said, and Rabbi, that's according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, and could be according to Tana Kama pachus mi krogeres. But when it comes to seeds that already have been planted, the Mishnah said it's kedei lezabel bo kelach shel kruv, according to Rabbi Akiva, or kedei lezabel krisha, according to the Chachamim. It's a whole different shear. Ha'itmar Allah. So the Gemara rejects this by saying that we have a comment of Papa to reconcile this seeming contradiction about the shear of Zarone Gina. Omar Papa Had Zria, Had Lo Zria. The Mishnah that tells us that it's only considered Chashuv if it has the ability, that's all you need to be Chayav in the case of basar dezar'in, who it's already been planted. You need a smaller amount in order to be chayev, and it's enough that that kedei lezabel ba, it could be used for something like a krisha or a kruv, just one single stalk. But yet, the shear in the case of zaruni gina makame dezarinhu, they need a larger shear, close to grogeris, less than a grogeris. So Gemara rejects this. Gemara says, ha itmar olam rav papa, ha dezria, ha delo zria. In other words, when the Mishnah gives significance to one single stalk of, let's say, cabbage, it's talking about a cabbage that's already been planted. Ha delo zria, the first Mishnah, requiring a larger volume, a larger minimum size of garden seeds, possibly even as many as five. That's a case of lo zria. And why do we distinguish? Lefi she'ein adam toreach lahotzi nima achas lizria. It's just not worth a person's efforts to take out a single seed for planting. And if it's a seed that's never been planted, then the quantity has to be larger. Once it's already planted, and now he has even a single stalk, that has chshivas to it. Now in the case of tanning, there we say that a person will take the effort and he'll do ibud, he'll be ma'abid, tan a piece of leather. If it's large enough to make a strip or a strap, if you will, to cover the amulet, the kamiya, and therefore there's no difference between the shear of untanned leather and tanned leather. Gemara asks, Vare tit, in the case of clay, de makami de legable, before he needs it with a K. Right, Tanya, we learned in a braisa. Modim chacham l'Rabbi Shimon b'motzi shofachin l'shus harabim. That if somebody takes out wastewater into the public domain, sheshi uran b'revius, he'll only be chayev if there's a minimum of a revius of this wastewater. And we discussed earlier what you do with this wastewater. Va'avinan ba. And we ask the following question: Shofachin l'may chazu on Rabbi Yirmiyahu legabel b'henes atit. So you need liquid, cheap liquid, but some sort of water to add to the gibel, to the kneading of clay. And we see that we're talking about carrying something that's mekame deligme, deligable, before it's needed. And yet, the shear is a revius. And there seems to be no... Let me just see. We see that the amount in the case of mekame deligbe, before it was needed, it's considered chashivus, because a revius mayim is enough to use to knead the clay. As we said, ligabel ben esatit. And that's a revius. V'ihu basa de ligabe, after he already kneaded the clay, then we learned in a different braisa, tit kidei lasos ben pikur. If he's chayav for clay, if he has enough clay to form some sort of an opening for a pikur, and that's a smaller amount of clay than is needed for a revius. So we see that kneading clay, or shall I say kneaded clay, and clay that has not yet been kneaded, are considered chashuv in different amounts. Why do we assume that the minimum amounts for tanned hide and untanned hide are identical? So Gemara answers, Hasam Nami Kidamaran. Lefisha Ein Adam Toreach Legabel Asatit Lasos Pi Kur. A person would not trouble himself to knead just enough clay, the minimum amount of clay, to form an opening for this kur, the pi kur. And therefore, if you're talking about unkneaded clay, you need a larger amount, because otherwise it's just not worth his trouble to knead it. Now, as far as oros are concerned, the hides that are needed for an amulet, a significant amount, even if it's not yet tanned, is considered worth trouble. It's worth his trouble, his efforts to tan even this small amount of hide. And that's why the minimum shear for both tanned and untanned leather are identical. Tashma, another kasha on Rav Nachman. The Yomar Abchia Bar Ami Mishmei De Ula Shlosha Oros Hen Matza V'Chipa V'Diftara. So Abchia now goes through all three of these. Matza Kimashmo. This is Matza. And Delo Maliach Udelo Kmiach Udelo Afitz. What's the similarity between this hide and matzah? It's that it hasn't been processed neither with salt, nor with flour, nor with gall nuts. And these are the three stages that are necessary to prepare to prepare a cloth. The kamashi uro, and we said delo maliach, delo kamiach, delo afitz. So it hasn't been treated neither with salt, with flour, or gallnuts. Is kidei lotzud bo, this is a brisa of Reb Shmuel bar Yehuda, lotzud bo mishkalos, ktanos, enough to wrap a small weight in it. Now these weights that were used back in the time of the Gemara by Socharim were made of softer metals like lead, and the merchant would wrap the weight in hide so that the constant rubbing of the weight against the pan of the balance would not cause the weight to wear down and become lighter. The kama. You're telling me that you need kidei lotzubo mishkolos ktanos, but what is this shear? Amar Abai riva de pumpadisa. This is a fourth of a fourth, meaning one fourth of a litar, or a litra, which was used in pumpadisa. Chipa de moliach. So chipa is a hide that has been treated with salt. And velo kimoliach, velo afitz, it hasn't been treated with flour or with gallnuts, the kamashi uro, kidisnan, as we learned in the Mishnah, or kidei lasos kamia. He takes out enough of a hide that he can make a kamia out of it, an amulet. Diftara de maliach ukmiach velo apatz. Diftara, which is a hide that has been treated with salt and flour, but yet it hasn't been treated with gallnuts, is kamashi uro. What's the minimum shear of these hides? Kidei lichtov olav asaget. You have to have a sizable measurement here of of Diftera, which is a hide, in order to write a get on it. Now, of all the measurements that we mentioned, this is the smallest, because all you need is what's called a Torah Faget, which is essential elements of a divorce, and that includes Shemos, and of course Zman, and Chasima Sa'edim, and the declaration that the Bezin has to declare that you, on the divorcee, are permitted to marry any man. So this is what we call a klaf. Ketani mias kedei lotzer bo mishkolos ketana. We see that Rabbi Chiya taught us that the minimum measurement for untreated leather is enough to wrap a small weight in it. V'yomar abai riva de riva b'fumpedisa. This weight is the fourth of Pumpadisa. So this is a larger minimum than that which is required, whether it be for tanned leather or other purposes. But in any event, the minimum for tanned and untanned leather are not identical, because here we're talking about river de Pumpadisa. Babai says that this weight is the fourth of Pumpadisa, which is a larger shear than was required for leather that was mu'ubad, or that was tanned. So we see clearly that the the shear for tanned and untanned leather are two different shiurim. And Tosas wonders why the Gemara repeats the statement of Abaye. We just had the statement of Abaye. Anyway, Hasam Bibi Shula. There, when we were speaking of matzah, Rav Chiya was referring to hide which is still moist. Bibi Shula. It's still like in the process, early process of Bishul. And that's why the minimum shear is a larger shear. But when you come to untanned leather that's dry and can be tanned, then it's treated just as tanned leather. So hide that is not roy, it's not omed for ibud, it's not standing up waiting for ibud, for tanning, then you need a significant amount in order to be chayev, in order to round or wrap around the amulet. And in that case, the Gemara is referring to the hide that can be tanned. And the owner of the hide never intended to tan it. In our case, the leather cannot be tanned. Therefore, its minimum requirement is going to be a larger requirement. So Gemara asks, Ve'el Hatanan, we have a Mishnah in Kalim that says Habeged Shlosha al Shlosha Lemidras. In order for a Beged to be Mekabel Tumas Midras, when the Zav steps on the Beged or leans on a Beged or lies down on a Beged, is Shlosha al Shlosha Tfachim. Hasak, when we talk about a sackcloth, arba al arba, you need four tefachim by four tefachim. And we see clearly that the sackcloth, which is made, as we discussed, the great length of goat's hair, since it's thicker than cloth, not as thick as a hide, therefore you have the shear of shlosha al shlosha midras. Or Chamisha al Chamisha, a hide has to be larger, 5 by 5 tefachim. And mapots, which is a kind of a mat, a machzeles, is shisha al shisha. It needs a larger shear of 6x6 tefachim. Bein lemidrash, bein lemes. Whether we're talking about a zav who stands on top of this hide, or we're talking about the hide finding itself together in a tent with a corpse in it, and that's tumas mes. Tani Allah, habeged vasak va'or kishir l'tuma kach shir l'hutsa. So we have a brisa that compares the minimum shear for Kabbalah's Tuma and the minimum shear for the Malacha of Hotzah. And with respect to cloth, the minimum shear is three square finger breadths. So this brisa that fixes the minimum shear for Or at 5x5 tefachim, that's a larger measurement than the one that's mentioned in our Mishnah. The larger measurement applies, therefore, to untanned leather. And once again, this would prove that the minimum shear for tanned and untanned leather are different. And the Gemara answers, Ahu bikartavola. The Mishnah's Kalim is talking about boiled leather, and that could be used for furniture. So therefore, the minimum shear is going to be larger. But in the case of regular untanned leather, then it's treated just as any other leather. Even if it's tanned leather, there's no difference between untanned and tanned. And here we turn to Daf Ayin Tes Amid Beis. Cloth, if he carries out a parchment, Kidei Lichtov Olav Parsha Ketana, which we said was the parasha of Kriyat Shema, the smallest parasha of Tefillin. And now the Gemara quotes another Mishnah, Uriminu, is there a stira here from the Mishnah that says, Klaf viduchsusmtus is kidei lichtov olav mezuzah. Now, we could talk for a minute about duchsustus, but first, let's just see what is the shear for these two items. The first of which is cloth. Kidei lichtov olav mezuzah. It's got to be large enough to write a mezuzah with all the parshiyos of a mezuzah, the two parshiyos of Kriyat Shema. Now, a mezuzah, a cloth for a mezuzah, which contains these two parshios, that's the minimum shear. It's a much larger shear than that which the Mishnah says that klaf kadei lichtov olav parasha ketana. So Gemara answers, my mezuzah. We have to reinterpret the brisa, then it says mezuzah. Mezuzah shebe tefillin. In other words, we're talking about enough klaf to write one parasha that we can put inside the tefillin. So basically, in effect, the Brisa is saying the same thing as the Mishnah. There must be enough parchment, enough cloth to write the smallest passage found in Tefillin. Now, just for a moment, what duchsustus is. When you have a hide, which is otherwise known as a gvil, and it can be split into two layers, the top layer, the outer layer, is called cloth. And it's made of a thinner outer peel, a klipa. The inner layer, is known as duchsustus. And that word derives from two other words, duch and sustus. Duch means a place, and sustus is really a Greek word that means flesh. And this is a word that's used to describe the lower layer of the hide, which is closer to the flesh. Bekari lehu litfilin mezuzah. Would the Tana use the word mezuzah to refer to tefillin? Mezuzah means a scroll, and it's placed on the doorpost. It's not likely that the Tana would use this term to refer to one of the four sections of tefillin, or the four parashas of tefillin in. The Gemara says, yes, you can refer to a scroll as mezuzah. And that's what the Parsha Tefillin, that's the implication of the Parsha Tefillin. Vasanya, it's not a kasha, but a raya, it was taught in a brisa, Ritzuos Tefillin ima Tefillin. When the straps of Tefillin are attached to the Tefillin, in other words, we talk about the Ritzuos, the black straps that are attached to the Tefillin, which are used to bind the leather box of the Tefillin to the head and to the arm. Is Ritzuos Tefillin ima Tefillin means when they're attached to the Tefillin. You wouldn't be chayav for Hutzah if we were detached from the Tefillin. Is Metamos Asiyadayim. It means that the hands of a person who touches Tefillin are rendered tameh, and that has to do with the laws of Truma that we've discussed in the past. And maso metamos asiyadayim bifnei atzman, meaning the ritzuos are metamos asiyadayim even when they are disattached, they're not attached to the tefillin. Now, wait, we're going now according to the Tanakhama. So Tanakhama says that metamos asiyadayim only if the ritzuos are attached to the tefillin, but bifnei atzman, if they're not attached to the tefillin, eino metamos asiyadayim. Rav Shimon ben Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Shimon hanogea beritzua tohar ad sheyiga v'ktzitza. If he touches the strap of the tefillin, the ritzua, he still remains tohar. And it matters not whether attached to the tefillin or not attached to the tefillin. However, his hands are not rendered tomei until he touches the leather boxes, the batim, of the tefillin. And Rabbi Zakkai Mishmo Omer, Tohor ad sheyagia b'mezuzah atzma. His hands are tohor until he touches the scroll of the tefillin itself. The box does not render him tomei. Well, Tanya, we have a brisa, Ritzuos Tefillin Ima Tefillin. And this brisa is talking about a case of the Ritzuos that are attached to the Batim, and they bind the Batim of the Tefillin to the head of the arm, as we've discussed in the past, is Metamos Esiyadayim. But that's only when they make the hands tamei with regard to truma. That's only if they are imat tefillin. But if they're bifnei atzman, then ein metamos asiyadayim. Reb Shimon Omer that hanogea b'ritzua tahar, even if they're attached to the batim, ad sheyagia, ad sheyiga b'ktzitza, unless he touches the batim. That's what we discussed before. Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, is of the opinion that Chazal extended tumas yadayim only to the klaf and to the batim, but not to the ritzuos. Rabbi Zakkai Mishmo Omer, he says in the name of Rav Shimon, Torah Shiiga b'mezuzah atzma. In other words, until he touches the cloth of the tefillin, and even if he touches the bottom of the tefillin, his hands are not makabel tumah. So why do you say that korilei l'tefillin mezuzah? That the Tana would use the word mezuzah to refer to the cloth. I mean, we see that that's clearly not so. So let's just point out that I may have made a mistake here. The word vasanya here, I think I indicated this earlier, but let me emphasize this again, is a raya. And we see that the word mezuzah here, when it says Rabbi Zakkai Tohar at Sheyiga the mezuzah atzma, the word mezuzah here is referring to the cloth of tefillin. And if you touch the bias, then that doesn't mean matami. You have to touch the cloth itself on which the parashas are written. But it's clear here that when it says the word mezuzah, it's referring to the scroll of the tefillin. But the Gemara now asks for midik tani sefer. In the same brisa, it says in the sefer the cloth. In other words, when is he going to be chayev for cloth, for carrying the cloth out to Rishus HaRabim, is kidei lichtov all of parasha ketana shebetfilin. Only if he has a large enough cloth, we could write the small parasha of tefillin, which is Shehi Shema Yisrael. That's the shortest of the parashas. Fine. That's identical to what we saw in that Mishnah. But Michlal de Reisha, it would seem by implication that the Reisha b'mezuzah atzmas kinan. Then the first part of the Braisa doesn't use this terminology, is therefore it must be dealing with an actual mezuzah. It's kind of unlikely the Braisa would refer to the cloth of tefillin upon which Kriyat Shema is written as mezuzah in the first section, and then call it the smallest passage found in tefillin in the second section. So the Gemara says that's not a kasha. In other words, you're asking that if you interpret the ratio of the brisa in this manner, then you're talking about the first and the second parashiyos. The first and the second parts of the Braisa would contradict each other, the Reish and the Sefer. So, Hachik Tani, the Gemara answers, Klaf v'duch sustamus shi'urim bekama. What's the shear for which he's chayev for the parchment or the sustamus? What are their minimum shi'urim? And the answer is that duch sustamus kidei lichtov alav mezuzah. In other words, tefillin are not written on duch sustamos, as the Gemara is going to explain. So the minimum shear for duch sustamos is enough to write the two parashas of the mezuzah. It's not enough to write the parash of Kriyat Shema. And klaf, in the case of parchment, kidei lichtov all of parasha ketana shebetfillin. That means the small parash of Shema. So basically what the Gemara is answering is that the first shear in the Braisa, which means enough to write a mezuzah, that applies only to duch sustos, upon which tefillin may be written. But the mention of parchment and duch sustos in the first part of the Braisa is an introduction, introducing those two substances whose minimums will be discussed in the Braisa. In truth, the minimum shear of parchment is enough to write the smallest parasha of tefillin, as indicated by the end of the brisa when it says Shema Yisrael. Omar Rav, duch sustamus harei kiklaf. It's the same harei kiklaf. It's the same as a parchment. What does this mean? Maklav kosmin olav tefillin af du sustamus duch sustus kosmin olav tefillin. So how is that possible? Tanan. We learned in that Mishnah, klav kidei lichtov parasha ketana shebetefillin shehi kriyat shema, implying the klav in duch sustus lo. It would seem to indicate that duch sustos cannot be used for tefillin. And that's why it has a larger shear for hautzah than the cloth itself. So Gemara answers le mitzvah. Although the Mishnah does imply that cloth is used to write tefillin, that's only fulfill the mitzvah properly. However, Duchstus is still valid, although it's not the perfect way of writing tefillin, but it's still valid. So that although tefillin should be properly written on klaf, if one writes them on Duchstus, then b'dieved they're valid. And if there's no parchment available, then l'chatchila you're going to write the parshas on Duchstus. Now tefillin are written on Duchstus are valid, but nevertheless the minimum shear for Duchstus is to write the larger mezuzah, because since people in general would write tefillin on the mitzvah, the lechatchila, which is klaf, the parchment, people do not store away a shear of Duchstus to write the small passage of tefillin, the Kriyat Shema passage, and therefore it's not considered chashiv. It doesn't have chashivus. Toshma, the Gemara now wants to bring another proof that tefillin cannot be written on Duchstus from the Brisa that says Halach l'moshe mi-Sinai, tefillin ala klaf. Tefillin have to be written on parchment. Mezuzah al Duchstus. Whereas the mezuzah can be written on Duchstus. Klaf b'makom basar. When he writes on klaf, on a parchment, he should write on the side of the parchment that originally faced the flesh of the animal, meaning the inner face of the klaf. And Duchstus is the inner layer of the hide, and the parchment is the outer layer. So there's a fundamental difference here between klaf, which is bimkom basar, which is on the inner face, whereas Duchstus is on the outer layer. So he says klaf bimkom basar, whereas Duchstus is b'makom sear, which means on the side that originally faced the hair of the animal, which we said was the outer face. So the Brisa clearly lists parchment as the material required for tefillin. And that's against Rav. So once again, maybe the case is l'mitzvah. In other words, one should write tefillin on klaf to fulfill the mitzvah properly, but the tefillin, if they're written on Duchstus, may still be valid. So the Gemara says, Vasanya Shina Pasul. So if he changed it, then the tefillin and the mezuzahs are invalid, clearly indicating that tefillin cannot be written on Duchstus. So Gemara answers a mezuzah. That this halach applies to a shinui, applying a shinui to materials of a mezuzah. However, if in the case of tefillin, he were to write the tefillin on Duchstus, they would be kosher. Vasanya shina bazeh bazeh posel, that if there was a deviation in this or this, both tefillin and mezuzah, it's invalid if he writes it on the wrong material. And the Gemara answers idi v'idi amezuzah, that both this and this apply to a mezuzah. Idi v'idi amezuzah. The Gemara answers that ha'deksivam a klaf b'makom sear. In other words, the mezuzah is invalid if he wrote it on a klaf, even if he wrote it on the side of the klaf that faces the hair. Inami, alternatively, the Gemara says, Aduchstus b'makom basar. He wrote it on the Duchstus, the side that faces the flesh. So basically the Gemara is answering that the Braisa means to teach us that there are two cases where a mezuzah will be possible because it's written improperly. One case is where the mezuzah was written on the side of the parchment that faces the flesh, which is the side of the parchment that one usually writes on. So again, this case is not explicitly mentioned in the Gemara's answer, but the fact that such a mezuzah is invalid, that's true, because it's written on parchment. Now the second is one of two cases. Either a case where he wrote the mezuzah on the side of the parchment that faces the hair. As he could have thought that the mezuzah would be valid because it's being written on the outer face of the hide, just as it is correctly written on Duch Sustus, or perhaps a case where one indeed wrote it on Duch Sustus, but he wrote it on the side facing the flesh instead of properly writing it on the side facing the hair. So these are the two cases mentioned by the Gemara, and in either case, the Braisa is not speaking of tefillin at all. So therefore, this is not a kash on Rav. Rav was talking about tefillin. Ibois Ema, the Gemara offers another solution, that the Braisa is stating that one who deviates and writes tefillin on Duch Tustus, they are invalid, it's possible. Shine bazeh bazeh tanoihi. But in fact, this question about one who deviated in both these cases, this and this, in other words, a machlokas, whether the deviation is invalid to invalidate both tefillin and mezuzahs, and Rav's ruling is actually the subject of a machlokas tanoim, this sanya, we learned in a braisa, shine bazeh bazeh possible. This is the Tanakama holds that whether you made this shinui and deviated both in tefillin and mezuzah, it's possible. Rabbi Acha machshir mishum Rabbi Achi bar Chanina. V'amri le mishum Rabbi Yaakov b'Rabbi Chanina. So we can say that Rav is really an interpretation of Rav Acha, that Rav Acha only rules valid tefillin, and that's perhaps shemachshir of Acha shemachshir haynu betefillin shenichtavu al duch sustus besover kamoso, and Rav holds like him. However, Rav Acha would agree that mezuzahs that are written on cloth are possible. That's the way Rashi seems to learn this sugya. I don't know. The Ritva writes that Rav Acha machshir bein b'tefillin shenichtav al duch tustus ubein b'mezuzah shenichtav al klaf. And Rav holds like Rabbi Chiya with tefillin, but he argues against him in mezuzah. Rav Papa Omar, just one second. Rav Papa Omar, that when the Braisa says Shina Bazel Bazel Posel Kipshuto, whether he made this change and deviated and wrote Tefillin on Duch Tustus, or if he made a deviation and he wrote a mezuzah on Klaf, in both cases it's Posel. But this is not a kash on Rav. Rav Di Omar Kitana Debe Menashe. The Tana Debe Menashe, Ksova al haniyar v'al hamatlis psula al haklaf v'al hagvil v'al duchstusus duchsustus, I'll get that word right eventually, kshera. Ksova mai, in which case did the Tana say that if he wrote it on a klaf, a gvil, or a duchstusus is kshera, ilema al mezuzah, if he is referring to mezuzah, mezuzah klaf mikas vinon, is a mezuzah kshera when he writes it on a klaf. we already learned before that imshina v'kasa mezuzah klafa mezuzah psula elolav, by process of elimination, it's got to refer to tefillin. And he holds that tefillin that were written on duchsustus are ksherim. And Rav holds like him. And Rav Papa has a preference here to say that Rav holds like Tana d'Bei Menashe rather than saying that he holds like Rabbi Acha. Because the words, the statement of Rabbi Acha, you can interpret that he doesn't intend to be machshir a shinui between a klaf and a dustumus. Maybe he's talking about a shinui in the klaf that he didn't write on the makom basar, but rather he wrote it on the makom seyar. Ulitaimech, the Gemara rejects this answer of Rav Papa to say that the Brisa is talking about tefillin, because tefillin agvil mikas vinon. Here on the list it says gvil, and we don't write tefillin on gvil. Tefillin on gvil are not ksheros. Now, as far as Sefer Torah is concerned, that's a different story. Ella, but rather, kitanya hi b'sefer Torah. Meaning that a Sefer Torah, you can write bein al gvil, bein al duchstustmus, u bein al klaf. L'chatchilu, we write on gvil. That's why the Brisa says, im kosval klaf, etc., etc., ksheira, but that's only b'dievet. The Rambam actually holds at the beginning of Hilchos Tefillin that a Sefer Torah that was written on Duchsusmus is posel. And the Beis Yosef says that the Rambam must have known of some Brisa that assumed that there's halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai regarding a Sefer Torah on Gvil, and the Rambam accepted that Brisa. So the Gemara says, Lema Misayele. Maybe we have a raya from a brisa to support Rav. The brisa says kayotze bo. The reisha of the brisa is not here. That's brought in Menachos Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis, that you can make tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel rosh. It means you can take the bias of tefillin shel yad and make it into four batim. And he puts each parsha in its own bias, and he makes it into tefillin shel rosh. Also, you're allowed to take parshios and ritzuos of shel yad and use them in a shel rosh. But mishel rosh, we don't make tefillin shel yad. And that has to do with the principle of ma'alin b'kodesh v'lo morinim b'kodesh. So if he doesn't have tefillin shel yad, and let's say he has two pairs of tefillin shel rosh, he's not allowed to take the bias of shel rosh, which is divided into four batim, and make it into one single bias for tefillin shel yad. And he's not allowed to take even a ritzuah of tefillin shel rosh and make it into a tefillin shel yad. Because kedushas tefillin shel rosh Chamura mikdushas tefillin shel yad, because the name of Shakai, of Shin, Dalet, and Yud, those three osios are added or found in the tefillin shel rosh. The Shin on the bias, the Dalet is the kesher shel tefillin, and then in the kesher the ritzuos we make in other words, the kesher, the ritzuos of tefillin shel yad. So two out of three of the letters of Hashem's name are on the tefillin shel rosh, and only one on the tefillin shel yad. And leim v'sayelo, keotzvei tefillin shebolu, v'sefer Torah shebolo, ein osim em mezuzel, fisha ein morida mikdusha chamura l'kdusha kala. So it means that tefillin and sefer Torah have a greater kedusha than Tefillin. Tefillin has four parshios, whereas Mezuzah only has two parshios. Sefer Torah, of course, has all the parshios, and that has a greater kedusha than Mezuzah. So let's be medayik from this price. A taima, the reason why you can't make out of Mezuzah, and make a Mezuzah out of a Sefer Torah, or out of Tefillin, is because Ein Moridin, that's a technical barrier, but ha, if Moridin, if theoretically you could be Morid, the Kedusha, from Kedusha Chamura, Kedusha Kala, Osin, then we could make a Mezuzah. And the Gemara asks, Diksiva Amai, on what was this Sefer Torah or these Tefillin written? Lav Diksiva Adus Sustamus. I always had a mem there, right? Duch sustus. Because if they were written on a cloth, they would certainly be possible for mezuzah. How could you even dream of making this into mezuzah? Forget about Ein Moridin. So we see here clearly a raya from this brisa for Rav, that tefillin that were written on duch sustus are ksheros. The Gemara says, lo, that's not a raya. Tiksiva al haklaf. We don't have a raya about Rav Shita that you could write kosher tefillin on duch sustus, because we're discussing a klaf. So Gemara asks, what do you mean? U'mezuzah klaf mi kasvinon? Can you write a mezuzah on klaf? We learned before that if you made a shinui and you wrote a mezuzah on klaf, is the mezuzah's psula. So how can you say that he's going to make out of tefillin mezuzah? That's impossible, because you're talking about the ksiv al klaf, that can't be used for a mezuzah. In the Gemara says that this Tana is of the opinion that a mezuzah that was written on klaf is kshera. For a Tanya, I'll bring you a raya from a brisa. It says that a mezuzah shiksava al haklaf al aniyar v'al matlis psula. Om Reb Shim ben Elazar, Reb Meir ha'yakosva al haklaf mipnei Shemishta Meres, because klaf lasts longer than dosustimus. So he writes here in the note that parchment klaf is made from the outer layer of the hide, which is stronger than the inner layer from which dosustus is made. So therefore, if this scroll is made of klaf, then it'll last longer than one that was made of dosustus. If you write mezuzahs, apparently it was common to roll them up, place them in hollow reeds, and parchment, which is thinner than dustus, is better suited for that kind of a treatment. Therefore, Rabbi Meir would write his mezuzahs on parchment. So according to Rabbi Meir, clearly a mezuzah written on parchment is valid. And if the brisa reflects the view of Rabbi Meir, then this cannot be adduced, this brisa, as a proof to Rav's ruling that tefillin may only be written on, may be written on dosustus. Now the Gemara makes a note of the fact that according to Rabbi Meir, it's possible to understand that Rav's ruling that dosustus is the same as klaf as parchment is in an entirely different way than we ever previously thought. Hashad diyos lahachi, now that we arrived at this understanding, that a mezuzah written on klaf is valid according to Rabbi Meir, and Rav holds like Rabbi Meir, is the Rav Nami lo tema duch sustus harehu keklaf. Rav didn't mean to say that duch sustus is like parchment, like klaf, and both could be used for tefillin, which is the way we understood Rav originally, but rather ela ema, perhaps klaf harehu kidustustus ma duchsustus kosvinol of mezuzah klaf kosvinol of mezuzah. That what Rav wanted to say is that just like you can write a mezuzah on duchsustus, you could write it also on klaf, reflecting the shita of Rabbi Meir. So Rav only said that the laws of klaf and duchsustus are alike. He didn't specify to what context, in reference to what he meant to make this comparison. Originally, we understood that Rav was extending the law that we knew applied to klaf, which is that tefillin could be written on klaf, stating that it could apply to duchstustus as well. But now the Gemara is understanding that Rav is extending the law, the din, that we know to apply to duchstustus, namely that you could write a mezuzah on it, and he rules that one could write a mezuzah on parchment as well. And we're up to Dio Kidei Lichto. So Mirtz Hashem, in the next shiur, we'll start on Daf Pei Amud Aleph, on the top of the Amud, going back to Dio. At what point are you chayav for carrying Dio? What's the shiur of carrying Dio, as far as Melechas Hotzah is concerned, on the top of Daf Pei?